What are you going to do? As gracious and generous as they come, Deb was shaken when she asked me that question years ago. Deb had recently become our church administrator, having faithfully served our youth for many years as David's assistant. I think I had been here about 3 years. We were in the middle of preparing our first strategic plan. In providing information to one of the strategic planning subcommittees, Deb discovered something that disturbed her greatly. There appeared to be a couple of folks who were trying to co-opt the process. Their end game was to make a case for my removal as your pastor. Most of the people involved with the planning process were unaware this was happening. The information we gleaned from the strategic plan was helpful. I'm grateful for the work that went into that strategic plan and the one we did a few years later. Both helped to guide our ministries in important ways. It just happens that about two or three folks were using that process to undermine my leadership. The gist of it is, if you go back a few years, you'll find a decade of unprecedented growth for our congregation. I think it was about 8.5% annually. You'd be hard-pressed to find another church growing that fast at the time. However, about 7 to 10 years before Fred arrived, the interim pastor who preceded me, that 8.5% growth rate had turned into an annual decline of 1.5%. The folks trying to remove me didn't like that narrative. So rather than going back 10 to 15 years to identify this long-term membership decline, they went back 5 years when the interim started. The narrative they wanted to create was that our decline started with Fred and continued with me. They could then argue, with the right pastor, things could go back to the way they were and we would start growing again. But the truth is, when the decline started, you had the right pastors. You had a fantastic staff. All three extraordinary pastoral leaders. So what happened? The early retirement bubble burst. Your growth was driven by downstate Presbyterians who were given incentives to retire early. Many of you are those folks. But like the baby boomer bubble, there wasn't as many retired Presbyterians moving to Traverse City after the retirement bubble burst. That's when the decline began. Why is this important? Now, you're entering a season of transition. Recently, someone said to me, the last interim was when all our problems started. Not true. There will be a lot of conversation about getting the right pastor. But that's not the answer. Your future growth and vitality will be found at that table, in the quality of relationships you develop with your new pastors and your neighbors. Beloved, we are the church, not the knife and fork club. A few of you still don't understand that. There's no place for backroom conversations encouraging pastors to leave, anonymous letters, or creating confidential lists criticizing the pastor. We are the church. We are about relationships. The Bible says if we have issues, we talk to each other. If those conversations don't work out, we include others from the church. The goal is always reconciliation. If you want to grow this church, take your love of neighbor to the next level. We've come a long way. Most of the silos and sniping are gone. By my count, we have one silo left, but it's on its last legs. More importantly, we have several people changing the culture of the conversation around our congregation. And I could not be here today without them. The connections you're making with each other and your neighbors are fantastic. The care packages. You've served over 8,500 people. How you've handled COVID. Seeing our youth usher and assist in worship each month has been a joy. The difference you're making with Matthew 25 and creation care. The conversations you're having around a new men's ministry and an ESL program coming to the church this fall. That's exciting. When you learn to share this good news with folks out there, when all of you learn to speak well of your pastors, this congregation, and each other, when your neighbors experience the life Christ is creating here, people will want to share this life with you. So how did I answer Deb's question? What are you going to do? I told her the story of Joseph and his brothers we read this morning. A story I've relied on throughout my ministry here. I told her the story of Joseph and his brothers, and I said, I'm going to do ministry and trust that even when folks intend to do me harm, God will use it for good. Ministry isn't for the faint of heart. Post-COVID, there has been much conversation about the Great Resignation. Millions of people are still out of work, many by choice. On the heels of the worst recession in history, people aren't returning to work as fast as we might expect. Some are making intentional decisions about the work they are willing to do, when they are willing to do it, and for whom. Others are burned out. In churches, this translates to deacons and elders resigning after a chaotic, challenging, and exhausting year of service. Pastors are leaving the ministry altogether. The pandemic only added to the pressure of a profession already experiencing a high rate of burnout because of overly critical parishioners, anxious and unhealthy congregations, unrealistic expectations, and the cultural conflicts rending our churches. Mark reminds us this morning, we've been this way before. For better or worse, this is the nature of ministry. The reward of hard work well done is more hard work to do. Jesus sends his disciples out among the towns and villages to teach and preach and heal. They return and report about their work. After hearing about all his disciples had done, some even didn't even have a chance to eat. After hearing about all they had done, Jesus invites them to a deserted place, away from the crowds, for a well-deserved rest. Jesus and his disciples were so successful in their ministries, it almost killed them. Crowds were overwhelming. Their needs were suffocating. People engulfed the disciples, demanding their time and attention as they had so many times before with Jesus. Their plight was so great, Jesus likened them to sheep without a shepherd. Jesus and his disciples were exhausted, but they never lost their compassion. They continued caring for people. Finding rest was easier said than done, even for Jesus. They packed their boat, headed across the lake. They arrived at a deserted place only to discover a crowd of over 5,000 people had reached there before them. 5,000 people in a deserted place. When Jesus and his disciples left in the boat, some folks recognized them. They ran through the towns and villages shouting, "Jesus and the disciples are crossing the lake!" Then they all ran to the other side of the lake before Jesus and his disciples could get there. The only time on record Jesus and his disciples took a vacation, and they are greeted in a deserted place by a crowd of over 5,000 desperate, hungry people. Not one in that group had brought anything to eat. So exhausted as Jesus was, he took the box lunch his disciples had brought, the 5 loaves and 2 fish, and he fed the crowd. After everyone had eaten, Jesus had his disciples get back in the boat and immediately go back to the other side of the lake. When they landed at Gennesaret, they were greeted by a crowd greater than the first. This crowd had rushed about the whole region, bringing sick people on mats to wherever Jesus was. And wherever Jesus went, villages, cities, and farms, they laid the sick people in the marketplaces and begged just to touch the fringe of Jesus' garment. All who touched Jesus were healed. The more people heard what Jesus and his disciples were doing, healing sick people, feeding hungry people, changing lives, the more people heard what Jesus and his disciples were doing, the more they wanted to be near Jesus. The reward of hard work well done is more hard work to do. But by connecting this story of the ministry of Jesus and his disciples with the feeding of the 5,000, Mark gives us a glimpse of something more. Yes, when we share in the work of Jesus Christ, we learn it's not for the faint of heart. Caring for people, sharing their lives, can be challenging, discouraging, exhausting work. You know this. We often encounter people at their worst. Yes, the reward when we do this work well is more of it to do. Like the disciples, there are times we can't escape. But watching Jesus feed the hungry masses with a few loaves and a couple of fish, we realize We're part of something bigger, something greater than we know. Our reward is more than more hard work to do. Our reward is the communion we share with Jesus Christ and each other. Many years ago, the great evangelist Dwight Moody proclaimed, "Show me a church where there is love, and I will show you a church that is a power in the community." He continues, "In Chicago, a few years ago, a little boy attended a Sunday school I know of. When his parents moved to another part of the city, the little fellow still attended the same Sunday school, although it meant a long, tiresome walk each way. A friend asked him why they went so far and told him that there were plenty of others just as good nearer his home. They may be as good for others, but not for me," was his reply. "Why not?" she asked. "Because they love a fellow over there." Moody continues, "If only we could make the world believe that we love them, there would be fewer empty churches." I selected the reading about Moses' death because I believe this church is about to do great things. When I look at the leadership God has provided, when I look at whom God has called in Jordan, I truly believe you are being prepared for an extraordinary future, greater than what you've done in the past. Trust your interim pastor to lead you through that process, that transition. Trust the seeds that have been planted and that God is with you even during that time. And trust your new pastor so you may see the good things that God has in store for you. Beloved, you're well on your way. The love you show for others is special. I was reminded of this on Wednesday night. In addition to the $5,000 matching gift, which we almost matched at Jazz Jokes and Jesus the first week, I was told by the donor, this matching gift is now a weekly gift. That's $5,000 a week. $25,000. She's doing this, in her words, because of the integrity of our ministry. In her eyes, we are who we claim to be. A church that loves people as Christ loves. She isn't a member, but she is moved by our witness and wants a part in our ministry. That's the reward of hard work well done. The love of Christ we share. Thanks be to God.